Okay, brishus, my father. You can never ask enough brishus. Tonight's shiur is dedicated for a refuah shlema for Israel, David ben Leah, Rafael Eliezer ben Rina Rezel, Yitzchak Moshe ben Shoshana, and unfortunately a new name to add to our list, a young woman who was recently diagnosed with cancer, Meira Mindel bas Chava Golda. So we started to say a few moments ago, in the first round of the shiur, that there are some big questions in Chumash that sometimes we don't ask. Right, again, just obvious things, things that if we were just, you know, reading a little slower, we would ask. And I think one of those big questions is the question of Moshe's relationship with Yisro. Right? I mean, if we think about where Yisro came from, we're talking about someone with Mechilta says, Rashi quotes in this week's Parsha, Mechilta says he worshipped every Avodah Zarah in the world. When we talk about Avodah Zarah, we're not just talking about, you know, like Revolvi writes in his Sefer. Avodah Zarah, you know, we got to bring it back to its shore. Avodah Zarah just means any type of foreign worship, which meant that he didn't just try every idol in the world. He had tried everything in the world. Right? I mean, you know, let's not think too much, right? But you can imagine what Yisro had experimented with, so to speak. And it's mind-boggling to think that the leader of the Jewish people, the one who's going to be the transmitter of the Torah, is the son-in-law of this priest, right? Obviously, Yisro transformed himself, but the question itself is such a glaring question. So if we look in source number one, it's taken from the Chayim Oran, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, and Rabbi Nassim describes the Shabbos in the year 1810, which was the end of Rabbi Nachman's life, Parshas Chukas Balak, and they were sitting around the table, and Rabbi Nachman, as he was known to do, would often praise himself very greatly. He used to call himself the tzaddik of tzaddikim, the Rebbe of Rebbes, and at the same time, he'd always be mezalzel himself completely and say, you know, I'm nothing, and I'm really a nobody. So he started there. Rabbi Nachman decided to ask a question on himself. In source number one, Leil Shabbos, Parshas Chukas Ubalak, Yud Bet Tammuz Tafkuf Ayin, 1810. Sipur al Shulchan Me'inyanav. So Rabbi Nachman was discussing the way that he acts. He was talking about his various strange hanhagos. V'tamal atzma al sha'oseh tamid dvar mishunim v'niflam yidas b'nei adam. And he was asking, you know, why do I always do these very strange things that no one else seems to be doing? That's a good question to ask oneself. Al sheru tamid nav v'nad mimakom l'makom. I'm always traveling, I'm always picking up and moving to one town and to another town. U'maya chasolo. Right, what was I lacking in Medvedevka? Right, Medvedevka. What was I lacking in Medvedevka that I had to pick up and move to another town? I arrived lo leishiv sham tamid. I should have just stayed where I was. Kishamay yoshe b'shalva v'hashkate. Everything was nice and peaceful there, and I started traveling around. And where did he go next? Right, Rabbi Nachman said that he didn't want to just maintain, you know, like when the Kotzker came, when he was looking for a place to set himself up. So he came to various towns, and they were not so, you know, no one really had a problem with him, and he left. And finally he came to a town where they threw sticks and stones at him, and he said, you know, this is the town I want to be in. So some people, you know, thrive on that challenge. So anyway, so Rabbi Nachman also, he wasn't happy just sitting by himself with his small chevra. So he picked up, Rabbi Nachman decided, I'll move to another town, where it's a little more exciting maybe. And there he was met with a lot of fighting and a lot of machlokas. And then he moved from there and set himself up in Breslov. And if that wasn't enough, and then at the end, we know, right, again, this is in 1810, the end of Rabbi Nachman's life, he traveled to Uman. So you would think, at least once he finally came to Uman, maybe at least he'd set himself up with a decent arrangement. Live by an erlich person. And he was living amongst all these, you know, the riffraff of society. So Rabbi Nachman asked on himself, he says, you know, what's pshat with me, right? What's my deal? Right? Why do I do this to myself? So if you look where the arrow is at the end of that line, Anisiv Amar Tilos, Rabbi Nassan, his prime disciple, said to him, said the following. He said, Halo mibnei man nasa Moshe isha mibnos Yisro daika. Why? How does it make any sense that Moshe could marry the daughter of Yisro? Right? Again, what was the question? V'kavanasi ha'isa pashur. Right? My kavana was pashur. It was rhetorical. Like, Rabbi, you know, you're a big tzaddik and you're hanging out with these lowlifes. So, you know, this is the way it is. This is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up the world. That sometimes opposites attract. Right? My kavana was simple. Ki kachu min hagei Hashem Yisbarach. This is how Hashem does things. L'chaber shnei hafachim. To bring together two opposites, like a Moshe and a Yisro. When Rabbi Nachman heard the question, he said, this is a massive question. And he kept, the whole Shabbos, he kept dwelling on this question. And he says, I have an answer, but I'm not, the Edom are not fit to be Makabal the Edus. And Rabbi Nassim says, he didn't even understand what that meant. And then later, again, the next day on Shabbos by lunch, he says, did you hear the question? Did everyone hear the question? How could it be that Moshe could marry the daughter of Yisro, who again was this Goyish priest, right? I mean, he was so bad that one of his names, you know, was Reuel. And the Medrash says in Shmos Rabba that he's called Reuel because he's Ra Tekel, right? I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu called him Ra. That's the same term that HaKadosh Baruch Hu used for the Yetzirah. Gemara says there are different terms for the names for the Yetzirah. Hashem called it Ra. Its essence is wicked. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, calls him Reuel. So how do you, you know, what's pshat? How do you understand how Moshe could be attracted into such a family? Now, obviously, if you go beyond pshat, so if you start dealing with Hashgacha Pratis and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, intended for the world to play itself out, and you bring in the element of Gilgul, you know, who was Moshe, who was Yisro in previous lifetimes, so then you can start to make some sense of it. And if you look in source number 2, in the Shla Kadosh, the Shnei Luchos HaBris and Parsha Shmos, going back a few weeks, so the Shla says that if you understand that Moshe in a previous lifetime was Hevel, and Yisro in a previous lifetime was Kayin, so then things start to make sense. Okay, let's take it from the arrow in source number 2. He says, if you understand this, if you understand who Moshe and Yisro were previously, and again, right, our question is still a very valid question in the realm of Pshat, meaning, on a surface level, how do you understand Moshe and Yisro coming together? Right? Obviously, there are deeper explanations which will be docha the question completely. So that's what the Shla is dealing with. He's taking us a little bit deeper, and he says, "V'zeh yiturtzu kam inyanim lefi hasoch masasi b'divrei Arizal." Ki nefesh kain nisgalgal b'mitzri shahargu Moshe, v'haruach b'korach, v'haneshama b'yisro. We know a neshama has at least, right, has more than three parts to it, but at least three basic parts to a neshama. Right, because we throw around different terms for the soul. A nefesh, a ruach, a neshama. Right, these are different aspects of a soul. And the soul of Kain came back in various reincarnations. Next week, in Yiratz Hashem, we're going to discuss Gilgal. That's next week's topic. So this is just a preview for everyone to whet their appetite. We're going to discuss it at length and why it has practical ramifications. That's was a big fight we had in TABC last year and once upon a time in the Beis Medrash about why it's necessary to know about Gilgal. How does it help me in my practical Avodas Hashem? But again, he says that the nefesh of Kayin came back as the Mitzri that Moshe killed. The ruach of Kayin came back as Korach, and the neshama of Kayin came back as Yisro. So Yisro is Kayin, right? Moshe goes and he kills the Mitzri, and then he goes, who's a reincarnation of Kayin, and then he goes and he marries Yisro's daughter, Yisro again being Kayin, a different aspect of Kayin's neshama. V'nei Kayin haragas hevel ba'avor tu'uma Yisera. The Medrash gives various possibilities, right? At least four that I know of. That the Medrash gives of what Kain and Hevel were actually fighting about. One opinion was that there was an extra twin. They were each born with a sister. One of them was born with an extra sister. And they were fighting over that extra sister. But that was once upon a time. People would marry their sister. They were fighting over a girl. Right? They were fighting over the extra twin. And that twin came back as Tzipora. Okay, so now let's see if we can hold cuff with all the different reincarnations here. V'alkein heishiv Yisro asegezeila v'nasu l'moshe. So if Kayin in his previous lifetime killed Hevel to steal the girl, to steal the extra twin, so now in the Tikkun what happens? Yisro, who's Kayin, has to give back the girl, has to give Tzipora to Moshe, who's Hevel. Ve'yeshiva segzeila, to fix the problem. Uvizem miturat eich lakach Moshe Rabbeinu al v'shalom bas komer. Says the Shla, this answers our question. How can Moshe marry the daughter of a priest? You know, imagine you go into Only Simchas one night and you find out that the Gadol Hador, right? A Simcha by the Gadol Hador, right? Who's he? Who's the Gadol Hador's daughter? You know, son is engaged. Oh, Mazel Tov, who's he engaged to? He's engaged, so yeah, right? If the Pope could have kids, right? Then, right? So that's the real Shiloh there. We're not going to suck it, right? How can the Pope have kids? Okay, right? But, you know, what kind of Simcha is this? So he says, this answers the question, right? How could it be on the one hand that Moshe refused to marry Moshe was willing to marry the daughter of a priest, and at the same time, Pivla Ratzel Linaik Menachris. At the same time, he wouldn't nurse from non-Jewish milk. Right? He's so separated from anything, you know, slightly treif, and he marries the daughter of a priest. Shla says, when you understand all these pieces, then everything makes sense. Jump down to where it's underlined again. He says, this is the Psha when Yisro and Moshe meet up later. It says, Ani Choseincha Yisro, I am your father-in-law Yisro. Says the Shla Kadosh, Ani Choseincha Yisro, Rashi Tevos Achi, my brother. He's alluding to the fact that they were brother, right? It was a brotherly reunion, not just a reunion of Moshe and his father-in-law. And he goes on to explain other things. He says, maybe this is the pshat. When Moshe shows up, he says, why didn't you invite the man to eat bread? So we know bread has two connotations in the way it's used in Tanakh. Sometimes bread means bread, and sometimes bread means a wife. Now we find that by Yosef and Mrs. Potiphar. Right, so when Yisro was asking, you know, where is this Mitzri, right? He was asking, is this going to be just some guy we're going to feed bread to, or is this the guy who we're waiting to to marry? Right, there was a whole game plan here as to what was going on, and this is also why Moshe has to kill the Mitzri being another aspect of Kayin. It's again Hevel seeking vengeance and killing Kayin to make up for what happened in the previous round. But again, if we go back to the realm of Pshat, the question, still stands. How could it be that Moshe married the daughter of Yisro? Okay, let's turn to the next page. And maybe we can begin to get an answer, but let's just ask one more question before we try to answer everything up. You could also ask, the Parshios, certainly again, if you get into Pnimius HaTorah, you get into Chassidus, the names of the Parshios are very significant, and it's very much connected to the inner essence of the Parsha. No, there's no question that the inner essence of this week's parsha is Matan Torah. This is Man of Kabbalah Satorah. Right, we're in the month of Shvat. Hoel Moshe Beira Satorah. Like we're learning in Chumash in school, right? It's a time of Kabbalah. It's a preparation for Kabbalah Satorah. So the question is, why should a parsha that we receive the Torah be named after Yisro? Again, it's basically the same question. It's a twist on the same question, right? Of all people to name, to name a parsha after, right? I mean, that's a big shot we ask every Satorah. Why is there a parsha named after Balak? How did he get a parsha? But all the more so, the greatest parsha of the Torah, arguably, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the first words of Torah we ever hear, is in a parsha named after Yisro. So how do you understand it? The answer is really one and the same. If you look in source number 3, from this Tushchina Rebbe Shlita, he's a big tzaddik who lives in Bar Park, son-in-law of Rav Moshe Wolfson. So he has a sefer called Tabat HaZav. Tabat HaZav is a sefer on Inyanei Nisuin and Tu B'Shat. So in the Tu B'Shvat section, he has different drushos and different shiurim that he gave in various years, and he explains this question. Okay, and with this, we'll maybe have a new appreciation of what Kabbalah Satorah is all about. What are we makabel this Shabbos? Right, the Kriyas Ma'orah this month. So this Shabbos is a miniature Kabbalah Satorah. So what are we being makabel? So let's take it from not the arrow. Let's take it from the top of the page. Source number 3. If you understand, we didn't get to really, unfortunately, we didn't have an Ashir in a while, right? We didn't get to speak about Tu B'Shvat, but the whole Indian of Tu B'Shvat and Shvat in general is about, it's a Zman of Aliyah, of picking ourselves up. And he gives various examples. Shasraf Ola B'Ilan. First of all, the sap, Rashi in two places in Sefer Rosh Hashanah, says that on Tu B'Shvat, the sap is rising up in the tree. The dead tree outside has a warm sap on the inside, the life source of the tree, and it's starting to sprout. Things are starting to rise up. The mazel, the astrological sign for the month of Shvat, its mazel is a pail, the dili, the bucket. Because the bucket is also, it's used to scoop down low and to raise things up, to draw water out of the well. Right, so that certainly fits our theme of raising up. According to one cheshbon, again, there's different ways to line up the Shvatim and the months. According to one cheshbon, you'll find that the month of Shvat corresponds to Asher. Right? Why? Sha'alav Nemar, what does it say about Asher? Asher is known for his oil, V'togel b'shemen raglo. And what's the nature of oil? V'shemen olev et safak v'lamashkin. The oil always rises up, it rests above all other liquids. So v'nimsa shekol chodesh hazeh shayach l'inyan aliyah. You see, the whole month is about rising up. Right? Now, obviously, he says, v'zeu b'koach ha-Torah. The power of Torah is the thing that elevates us more than anything else. Okay, now we jump to the arrow, and now we get our answer. V'chein ha-parsha shel matan Torah shu parsha Yisro. Why did Hashem decide to send us a message by placing matan Torah in a parsha named after a Goyish priest? Again, obviously, he became a tzaddik. He changed his ways. But still, after his background, you would think, there's no chance that this man could have sheiches to Moshe Rabbeinu, and have no sheiches to the Torah itself. So he says that the parsha is named after you. So moral inyan zesha Torah yoredes lechol ha'amakim v'goremes aliyah lechol ha'shvala. That's the power of Torah, and that's tonight's topic. That Torah has the ability to transform even the lowest thing. Torah can descend. Torah is compared to water, just like the water will trickle down into the little cracks, right? As deep as it can go, it'll keep running down and down and down, like the Gemara says in Tanis and Daf Zayin, right? It just goes lower and lower and lower. So a person has to be humble when they learn Torah. But the water penetrates to the deepest depths. And then from there, the Torah is able to elevate even the lowest Jew, right? Or even the lowest priest. Even the biggest, the most goyish priest in the world, in world's history. Ki Yisrael lo hayniach avodah zarah shelo avda, right? Like we've said, Yisrael, there was no avodah zarah that he hadn't been a part of, ubal is gayer. And through the koach of Torah, he was able to transform himself. And he goes on to say, Yisrael wasn't even the Torah that he learned. The Gemara says in Ksubis that a person should maintain a connection to Torah, and by doing so, the light of Torah will give him life. What if a person doesn't have a connection to Torah? So it says you should marry your daughter to a Talmud Chacham. Right? That's another way to save yourself. So Yisro took that second approach. He wasn't even someone who was necessarily learning Torah. Right? At least certainly not at the point where Moshe married him, married Zipporah. He was someone who just, in some small way, he connected himself to Torah, and through that he went through a complete transformation. Because that's the nature of Torah. Anything it touches becomes transformed. Right? That's the unbelievable koach of Torah. This week in TABC, we were learning Gemara Kedushin Daf Lamed Beis. So the Gemara talks about how a Rav can be mochel on his kavod. It's initially a machlokas, and we conclude that a Rebbe can be mochel on his kavod. Right? The Gemara then goes on to say that even when a Rebbe is mochel on his kavod, it's still proper that a person should give some small miniature kavod. Even if he's mochel, right? And you don't have to, let's say, rise to your feet fully. And you don't have to stand for your Rebbe mufak till he's, you know, out of your eyesight, like you're supposed to do for a parent. You should still always do a little something. So the Chazon Ish writes, in source number 4, Tinyardeya Simon Kuf Nun Aleph in the Chazon Ish, he says, take it from the middle of that first line, Venira, the Ein Roy Limchol Tamid, right? So first of all, the Chazon Ish says, even though a Rebbe Me'ikar Adin can be Mocha on his Kavod, it's not something he should do constantly. Why? Because it takes away from the honor of Torah. And he says, and we see in the Gemara, there were people who were Machbid about their Kavod. And the Gemara's conclusion was, yeah, they were machbid, even though they were mochel on their cover, they were still machbid that they should still get a little something. And the Chazon Ish writes in the last line, take a look at the last line, Aval gam b'chihai gavna hidar mevad le'bai, you still need to do a little something, that's the lashon of the Gemara. Why, says the Chazon Ish, shelo yei zilzol ha-Torah. Right? That there shouldn't be a zilzol ha-Torah. What does that mean? Well, what's maybe perhaps the deeper explanation of what the Chazon Ish is saying? What's the zilzal? He's mochel. The zilzal is that if you come into contact with Torah and you're not moved even slightly, even if you do that, that fake nevarech elokeinu shachanu, right, where you just bounce on your chair a little bit. If you're not even moved, if Torah can walk into the room, even if the Torah is mochel, and you're not changed by it, then something's wrong. That's a zilzal of Torah. That undermines what Torah is all about, because Torah by definition changes a person. It motivates a person. It moves a person. Right? The goal should be a complete transformation, like Yisro. But at the very least, even when the Torah, so to speak, is mochel on its kavod, it still has a roshem on a person. It still makes an impact on a person. In some way, you're going to be moved by it. But again, the goal is that we should have a complete transformation, right? At the very least, you should be moved. Something should happen. But the bigger goal is that I go through a complete transformation. And that's what Yisro went through. And that's really what Torah has the ability to do that. Torah is compared to many different liquids. I think the Medrash in Shir HaShirim says Torah is compared to oil, and to wine, and to water, and to dew, and to honey. Right? It's a Medrash, it's also a Pasuk in Tehillim. So the Chafetz Chaim wrote a Sefer, in source number 5, the Chafetz Chaim wrote a Sefer called Likutei Halachos. And what it was with summaries of Gemara, those Mesechtos that the Rif didn't write in the back, his Psach Halacha, the Chafetz Chaim took on upon himself the daunting task of trying to write a Rif style commentary that picked out all the halachos. The Rif didn't write summaries of the kachim stuff. So the Chavetz Chaim said, I'll fill in. Right? You imagine it. They say the Chavetz Chaim was like one of the Rishonim, and they weren't joking. Right? He wrote a commentary. He says, I'll fill in where the Rif left off. And not everyone, actually, believe it or not, was in favor of this. But he felt this was the proper thing to do for Chazara to get the key points of the Gemara and the Psach Halacha. So in his introduction to the Likutei Halachos, the Chafetz Chaim talks about the fact that the Torah is compared to both money and to honey. Right? What's the Pasuk? We know the Pasuk. Let's take a look. Baruch Hashem Elokei Hashemayim Velokei Haaretz. Right? Blessed is Hashem, the Master of the world, Asher Nasan Lanu Torah So HaKadosha HaChamudu Mikol Chemda, the most precious thing in the world. And then he quotes the Pasuk, K'dichziv Nechamadim Yizav V'mipaz Rav, it's better than any money in the world, any jewel, any precious mineral in the world, U'mitukim Midvash V'nofet Sufim, and it's sweeter than honey. Right? Torah is compared to honey in one place, and Torah is, in the one measure, says that Torah is even sweeter than honey. Right? It has to be that Torah is sweeter than honey. Because if Torah is the blueprint of the world, right? So where does honey come from? Honey has its shorash in Torah. Honey is a diluted, so as sweet as honey is, if you could taste the source, right? Honey is just a manifestation of Torah. Torah being the blueprint of the world. That's how one sefer brings down. So that means the Torah itself is even sweeter than honey. So that's what it means. The Torah is greater than any money, and it's sweeter than any honey. Okay, what does that mean? In this world, there are two ways to evaluate something good. Right? Sometimes we look at the value of something, right? The monetary value of something. And sometimes we look at its sweetness. You know, what is it? What type of pleasure do I get from tasting it? Dainu, zav upazrav, shivirav, right? When we talk about money, so it's worth a lot, right? Avalinu matukla, but if I pop the gold coin in my mouth, assuming it wasn't a Hanukkah gel, chocolate coin, right? It's not going to taste very good. The flip side is honey. Udvash hudavar matuk, dvash is very sweet. Aval shivyo ainu kokach. But if I want to, you know, barter with dvash, it doesn't carry a very high price. The Torah seinu akadosha yeshba shtei malos. The Torah has both aspects. The Torah is very valuable and it's very sweet, And then he goes on to explain the following. If you jump down to the line about halfway down, the line that begins with the word who, it's line 15, right? And he writes in the middle of that line, "Umasha kasev umetukim midvash." It's sweeter than honey. Ki adua sheyesh beteva dvash koach hametiko sagadol. You know what's so amazing about honey? Besides being so sweet, it's so powerful that ad sheim yipol ba'izeh davar lechem ubasar. If a piece of bread or a piece of meat were to fall into the honey and it was left there for a period of time, what would happen? V'yishta ba shihoi rav. It remained for a long time. B'meshech hazman yishapich alechem va'basar ledvash gamor. It would turn into honey. So much so that we've paskin, that most poskim hold, and he writes it now in the next line, v'neila rov ha-poskim, afilu umnafo ba-davar iser. If a piece of, the poskim talk about this, because sometimes, you know, a bee's leg will get detached and land in the honey. So do I have to be concerned that maybe a bee's leg was detached in the honey and now my honey's treif? So the poskim say, no, you know why? Because as time goes on, what happens? The bee's leg, that item of treif, is transformed into honey. Says the Chafetz Chaim, that's the power of Torah. Right? When you immerse yourself in Torah, just like a person, just like something immersed in honey becomes honey. When you immerse yourself in Torah, when Yisro was prepared to jump into Torah, or again, Yisro's connection maybe wasn't even so strong initially, but all the more so if we jump into Torah, if we allow ourselves to immerse ourselves in Torah, like the honey, we too will become completely transformed. We become Torah. We become a piece of Torah. That piece of meat is no longer meat. It becomes honey. Right? To the point that it's no longer recognizable. All you see before your eyes is honey. And it doesn't matter how tummy you are, right? Yes, sir, again, we're talking about someone who was the avi avos hatuma in his previous life. Right? He was as low as you can get. Torah can beat out any tuma. Chanukah time, I said a beautiful remez that I saw in the Sefer Sheiros Menachem. He says if you spell out the word tummy, right? You spell out the letters of tummy. Spell it out in miloy, expand the letters. So spell the letter tes is tes, yud, tuf. Right? Mem, how do you spell mem? You spell it out, mem. Aleph, right? Tame, Aleph. Aleph, Lamed, Pei. He says, if you add up Tame and Miloy, I mean, we're talking about a full expanded Torah. It's Gematria 610. Torah 611. Torah is one more. Because it could be the most expanded Torah in the world. Torah will have a way to overpower that. If you jump into the Torah, if you allow yourself to sit in the honey, so you'll become completely transformed. Okay, who's watching the clock? My clock is the conference here, so I don't know. 12-2. Okay, let's go to the next page. There's other ideas I wanted to share with you, but the hour is late, and let's go to the next page. I think the best mussar that I ever got from a Sefer Chaim, you may have been there. I don't remember if we were learning this together. Or I told you after. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about in a second. Rishon Shadron has a vard in a Sefer Koldo Didofek, which is a Sefer on Tshuva. It's an Elul Sefer. And he's complaining about the fact that people like to hear a lot of nice ideas, but we don't actually do anything with it, right? I think this was the best mussar I ever got, because I guess I should show you the vart first in this week's parsha that he says, and then you'll see why I got rocked by Shalom Shadron. He knew exactly what I was going to do. I fell right into his trap, and you'll see what I mean. The question is as follows. You know, it's good, Yisro underwent this transformation. Yisro heard whatever he heard, right? He heard something, Machlokas in Chazal, exactly what he heard. But he was inspired, he heard something about Klal Yisrael's emergence as a nation, and he wanted to be a part of it, right? So the whole world heard. The whole world heard when the Kriyas Yamsuf happened. The whole world heard about Matan Torah. The whole world heard about the Nisim and Mitzrayim. So when the Pasuk says, Vayishma Yisro, and the Gemara says, oh, what did he hear that caused him to come? Right? And the thing that distinguished Yisro from the rest of the world was that what? Not just that he heard it, but he acted on that he came. So it says Rosh Hashanah, shouldn't the Pasuk say Vayavo Yisro? That Yisro came? To say that Yisro heard, that doesn't distinguish him from anyone else. Everyone heard. The thing that was unique about Yisro was that Vayavo Yisro, that he was motivated by, he was moved by the Torah, right? Something changed within him. So that's Rav Shlomo Shadron's question, right? It should say Vayavo Yisro and not Vayishma Yisro. So let's take a look in source number 9 on the left hand side on page 3. We'll go two paragraphs from the bottom. Yeshmiya v'yeshmiya. Right, I can think of actually a movie which I will not cite, I will not reference. Anyone who thinks they know what it is can tell me after this year. I don't think the younger crowd will know what it is. There's an old movie that there was a line about hearing versus hearing. My father knows what I'm talking about. Okay, you have to be curious for this stuff. Yeshmiya v'yeshmiya, right? There's hearing and there's hearing. Right, it was a reference to listening to Jimi Hendrix, right? And the African American in the film was saying that the white people, they listen to Jimmy, but they don't really hear Jimmy. They don't, right? There's hearing and there's hearing. There's madrigos and hearing. You could hear something and it could penetrate you, or you could hear something in a superficial way. So he says, Bior ad Morza Zatzal. He says, I heard from my Rebbe, who's his Rebbe, Rav Leib Chassman, presumably. He says, I heard sheyeshmiya v'yeshmiya. There's two types of listening. You talk in Cheshnaim Shamu Esoso Davar. Two people can hear the exact same thing. Echad Heivin Vasheni Lo. And one gets it and one doesn't get it. What does it mean to get it? Vehechan Nafkamino. Bekiya Madvarim. Who acts on it? How do you figure out who really got it? Who acts on it? Zesha Heivin Kiyam. Vezesha Lo Heivin Lo Kiyam. The one who got it acted on it, and the one who didn't. So when we say Vayishma Yisro, yes, that is the difference between Yisro and everyone else. Everyone else only heard in a superficial way. When we say Yisro heard, it meant that he really heard it. He really got it. You don't need to say he came, because if you really heard it, that automatically implies that you're going to act on it. And he goes on, he gives a mashal, Rav Leib Chassman gives a mashal. He says, imagine a guy who's never heard a train before. He's standing on the tracks, and he's noticing, wow, this is really interesting. Like, where is this? He never saw a train before. He's standing on the tracks, he sees these long strips of iron, you know, leading off into the distance. He doesn't really know what it is. And he's looking down, and he starts walking along the track, trying to see where it heads. All of a sudden, a massive train comes, you know, ripping down the tracks. And the train starts blowing its horn. And the guy says, wow, I never heard a sound like that before. Right? And the guy keeps blowing his horn. And the guy's standing there enjoying this beautiful sound. And needless to say, you know, he gets run over by the train. What happened? Did he hear the horn? He heard the horn, but he didn't know what that meant. It didn't mean anything to him. Right? Because he had no understanding of what that signal is supposed to do. That signal means get off the tracks. Right? Or you're a dead man. But it didn't penetrate with him because he didn't understand it. So I remember, I even brought along the sefer. I didn't put it in the source sheets, but I brought along the Kol Dodi Dofik. I just want to read you Rav Shalom's line. Because Rav Shalom's complaining, you know, people go all the time. They want a little inspiration going into Rosh Hashanah, and they run around, they listen to a million shirim, and they never actually stop to change themselves. So I remember the first, Chai, were you with me? We were together? Right? So Rav Shalom writes, right after he says this, he says, Gam dvarim elu gufa yecholam lihishama ka'o dvart nifla. He says, some people are going to hear this and say, wow, it's a good vart. Right? You can hear this vart, he says, it's just another good vart. I read this thing and I said, oh, this, I said, that's a great vart. And then Rosham, a line later, he says, you idiot, I'm trying to tell you. Like, this is exactly the point I'm trying to make. Don't just say, oh, it's a nice vart, it's a nice shtickl Torah. The goal is that you're motivated by it, that you're transformed by it. Right? That you jump into the honey and it changes your entire perspective. So the goal is that we should have a complete immersion, a Yisro style immersion. Okay, so the Gemara says that a base medrash is compared to a mikvah. So the Svar Makadoshim say that just like a mikvah, you need to be completely in it to get purified. So too in Torah, you also really need to be fully in it. But just to be melamed chus on us a little bit, because Yisro himself, you know, didn't get the full transformation overnight. He got into it just by marrying off his daughter to a Talmud Chacham. He was able to just touch Torah and be transformed by it. Again, eventually he went fully in. Right? But just to show us the importance of, that Torah is so powerful and so poignant that even just having any contact with it can bring a person back, can transform a person. So we'll just end with one or two final ideas. On the last page, you know, we've all heard of the concept of the Ben Sora Mora. And the Ben Sora Mora is Narag Hashem Sofa. We kill him while he's young, because eventually he's going to go off and do terrible things. Now, we are all familiar with Rashi's description of it, based on the Talmud Bavli, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, of what's he going to do? Right? Why do we kill him when he's young? What's he going to come to do? So the Talmud Bavli says, eventually he's going to start to steal and rob and kill. And then eventually, you know, he's going to come to very bad things. The Talmud Yerushalmi is a different girsa. And it makes it, see, on the surface it makes no sense. Okay, if you look on the right hand side of the page, source number 10, Rav Bezalel Zsolti, who was one of the great Rabbanim of Yerushalayim. So in the Sefer Zikaron of Rav Bezalel Zsolti, In the Memorial Journal, they say an idea that he had, an explanation of this. Okay, look where it says, Ulam B'Talmud Yerushalmi, where it's underlined. Four lines in. The Talmud Yerushalmi has a very strange version of what's going to happen to this kid as he falls apart. Right? Says the Yerushalmi, two lines in the bottom of that first paragraph. Safa Kadosh Baruch Hu Shesov Ze Asid Ligmur Nichsei Aviv Es Nichsei Imo. He's going to finish off all his parents' possessions, right? Meaning he's going to help himself with all the money and spend it all on the 5 million restaurants in Teaneck, right? Burgers Bar and every other new restaurant that opens every other day, Mocha Blue. Right? He's going to go out and enjoy himself. V'yoshev lo parches drachim.
Some people hear about a restaurant.
Some people hear, exactly. Some people hear it, very good. You hear about a restaurant, some people act on it. Excellent. Right, so he's going to waste his parents' money. He's going to go sit at the parshas drachim. Mikapeach as a brios. He's going to start beating up people and robbing people. The horegas and the fashos. He's going to turn into a murderer. And then you know what's going to happen at the end? Chas v'shalom sofo l'shacheach as tamudo. He's going to start to forget the shaklevatari of the sugya he was holding him before he started going off the derech. That's the last step. That he's going to start to forget the Torah. Doesn't make any sense, right? Seemingly murdering people and stealing and all these other things, he's going to forget his learning as he starts to drift, and then he starts to do these other things. Says Rav Zsolti, what's the pshat? The pshat is that as long as you still have a connection to learning, then there's always a chance that the light of learning, the power of Torah, can bring him back, as long as you're even just touching it. But as soon as you could be a murderer, you could be a robber, as long as you have that connection, there's a chance that the light of Torah is so strong, the honey is so sharp, that just by touching it, right, you'll be turned into honey. But if, God forbid, the person goes off to the point that he's lost his complete connection to Torah, so then we're ready to kill him. Then we're saying, this person has no hope. Right? And that's the power of Torah. So again, you know, the goal is full immersion. But you can't always have that. You can't always have that. Rav Chaim Volozhiner was once asked, what was the schedule in Yeshivas Volozhin? So he got up and he started to describe the schedule. He says, you know, breakfast is at this time, and lunch is at this time, and most of the bachurim go to sleep by this time. So someone said, you know, you'd think, the schedule, tell me the learning schedule. He says, there is no learning schedule. He says, we have set times for eating and sleeping, and the rest of the time, we fill it in with learning. Right? I mean, we just finished Tu B'Shvat. We're in the stretch now. The Kedushas Levi says that Tu B'Shvat is a Hana for Pesach, and Pesach, we know, is Sfiras HaOmer, and Sfiras HaOmer takes us right to, we're now in the Zman of preparing ourselves for Kabbalah Satorah. And that's why we read Parshas Yisro this time of the year. It's time for us to try to clarify our connection to Torah. We won't read it inside because it's late, but in source 11, the Arugas Abosim quotes from Kadmonim, from early sources, that at our Sinai, we all have this idea, everyone's heard the idea, that every person has their own letter in Torah. Right? Again, why do I only have one letter? Because through that one letter, I can come to call a Torah Kul. If I just hang on to touching my one letter, right? Within that one letter, like the brother of the Gra writes in his introduction to his Malos HaTorah, Rav Avram, the brother of the Gra, says that every letter of the Torah, you know, we know, we think in the Beis Bereishis, we know how it's called a Torah Kula, and certain words have everything in it. Every letter has everything in it. So through my letter, I can come to complete transformation. But the Arugas Abosim says from early sources, at Kabbalah Satorah, what happened? At Matan Torah, what happened? There was such clarity when the heavens opened up that not only did everyone know their letter, they knew exactly where their place was. And they lined up to spell out the Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu, let's say, was the Beis Bereishis, so he stood, and let's say Aaron was the Reish of the word Bereishis, he stood next to him, and everyone, they physically lined up, all 600,000 Jews physically lined up and spelled out a Sefer Torah. Right? I always compare it to like a little kid when he gets his Chumash for the first time, right? And sometimes the kids have like a little letter on their, you know, they're wearing like a little letter on their neck, and they line up and they spell out like Torah Tzivah and Moshe or something like that. This was the greatest Chumash play of all time. All of Klal Yisrael lined up to spell out from Bereishis ad Le'enei Kol Yisrael to the last letters of the Torah. They spelled out the entire Torah. But it comes with so that's what happens in Parshas Yisro. We clarify our letter, and clarifying our letter means that I become aware of the fact that yes, I may only have, you know, one letter at times, but through that one letter I can be completely transformed. I can do a Yisro style transformation. Chavetz Chaim, you know, I preach a lot of Chassidus, and I'll end with this bracha, but I hope it's a bracha. The Chavetz Chaim was one time speaking with someone who was republishing a certain sefer, and this guy walked in, a stranger walked into the room, and he heard that this fellow who was speaking to the Chavetz Chaim was an einikel, was a grandson of some great Hasidic rebbe. And this guy was very impressed. This guy's publishing a manuscript, oh wow, you're a descendant of this great Hasidic rebbe? Chavetz Chaim wasn't so impressed. And he said the following, and believe me, I preach all the Hasidics in the world, but the Chavetz Chaim says that when a person comes to Shemayim after 120 years, they're not going to say, are you a Chassid? Are you a Misnagid? They're going to ask you, were you Kovei Yitim L'Torah? Did you spend time learning? Did you do your best to learn as much Torah as you are? It doesn't matter if you're the son of some Rebbe, or if you're, it doesn't matter who you are. If you're connected to Torah, you'll be transformed. And if you don't make the effort, the Chofetz Chaim didn't finish his sentence. He said, and if God forbid not, and he left it at that. He didn't want to say, you know, what the flip side is. But it doesn't matter, you know, as you have to have that connection. And this is the time of the year where we strengthen that connection. So we should be Zocha as the fruit of Tisha B'Av, of Tu B'Shvat, I'm sorry. As the fruit of Tu B'Shvat is used up, is no longer. Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac of Zichov was once sitting by his Tish, Tu B'Shvat. And the Hasidim were all gathering around and everyone was pushing for fruit. And the fruit got used up, the fruit ran out, they ran out of fruit. And everyone was very disappointed. Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac of Zichov gave a clap on the table. He says, you want fruit? I'll give you fruit. He says, Eilu Dvarim, Sha'adam Ochel Peroseim Ba'olam Hazeh, Karen Kehamas Olam Haba. You want fruit? I'll give you fruit. V'talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. He says, that's the fruit. There's plenty of fruit left. Amir Tashem, we should be all be zochet to taste the sweet fruit, to taste the sweet honey, and Amir Tashem, as we come to Kabbalah Satorah, the final Kabbalah Satorah, the real Kabbalah Satorah of Shavuos, we'll be ready for that complete transformation. Shkoyach.